name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 23. I'm recording it on Sunday, October 12th. Stocks are currently at a PE 10 level of 15, which is fair value. We've seen big drops in prices. It may be that by the time I post this podcast at the website, it could be that we'll be at the same place. It could be we'll be down a lot further, and it could be that we'll have made up a lot of that ground we lost and that we'll be at much higher valuation levels. I just don't know. That's why I'm giving the exact date, so you have an idea where stocks stood at the time I recorded the podcast. And the title of this one is Stock Panic. People are talking about panic. We've experienced a horrible week. Most people's perspective, a horrible week in stocks. Prices have gone down dramatically in recent weeks, and we've lost $8 trillion of wealth over the past 12 months. And the big word that people are using, people have been using over this weekend is panic, as in don't panic. The experts are telling us don't panic. Hang in there. Now, to a large extent, I of course agree with that. I don't know that there's anyone who would say panic is a good thing. Panic is almost by definition a bad thing. It's irrational. A panic is an irrational act. So, I'm certainly willing to endorse the conventional wisdom that one should not panic, but the context in which things are said carries a lot of weight. And the context in which a lot of these urgings that middle class investors not panic is mixed up. So I want to sort through some of that and offer some of my own observations as to what you should be doing and how you should be thinking about stocks going forward and how you should be responding emotionally to this huge price drop. The first thing that I think I should say is something that not many people are saying, and something that all investing experts should be saying, in Rob Bennett's opinion. The drop in stock prices is a good thing. The drop in stock prices is a good thing. It's not good the way it's happening exactly. It's happening in the context of this bank bailout, and there's sort of a crisis of the global markets and a crisis of even global leadership. There's a real question at this point in a lot of people's minds as to whether the governments and the markets have a handle on things anymore. You know, the things are sort of spinning out of control. That's troubling, extremely troubling. So I don't mean to say that all of that is good. But in isolation, just my focus is personal finance. I'm trying to help individual middle-class workers know what to do with their money. In terms of the individual investor, the drop in stock prices is an extremely healthy thing. And that needs to be said, and it needs to be said by lots of people so that we all come to terms with what's going on. And if you're going to put out a message, don't panic, well, it would seem to me you would want to not be putting out only bad news. It's bad news that makes people panic. And there's plenty of bad news in this story. So, you know, if you're telling the straight story, there's going to be this negative side to it. Well, why not tell the positive side as well? The negative side is that things appear to be spinning out of control. That is scary as all get out. The positive side is stock prices are now at fair value. That is huge. I checked Thursday night to see how far back it's been since stocks have been at the valuation levels that they are at today. When I checked Thursday night, it was 1991. That the prices are the best they've been in, what is that, 17 years? 17 years. I read in an article in the Wall Street Journal today, they said 89. They said we're at the best that it's been since 89. So I guess that includes Friday's numbers. So we're now to the point where valuations are the best they've been in 19 years. Well, is that not a silver lining in this dark cloud? What that means is most of us, I'm speaking to other middle-class investors, all of us are trying to fund our retirements. We're all hoping to have enough money to retire by the time we're 65. Some of us are hoping for early retirement. We're hoping to have enough at earlier ages. So we want to have good places to put our money, places where we can reasonably expect a strong long-term return. That hasn't been stocks for over 10 years now. Perhaps you've noticed. We behaved irresponsibly in the 1990s. I don't put the primary blame on middle-class investors, although I certainly think we have to take on a portion of the blame. I put the primary blame on experts who marketed this dangerous passive investing theory, if you can call it that. I don't think it rises to the level of theory. It's just a ball of emotion, is all that I can see. But this idea that for some unknown reason, it's not important that middle-class investors lower their stock allocations when prices get to insanely dangerous levels. I don't buy that idea even for 10 seconds. So the experts behaved, you know, extremely irresponsibly, and middle-class investors to a large extent went along. In all fairness, you know, we share a portion of the blame. But the bottom line is, when stocks are overvalued, it's equivalent to an individual borrowing on a credit card. What we're doing is we're just taking future returns and pushing them into the current day. So in the 1990s, what we did is we sucked trillions of dollars of stock market gains out of the future and just decided to add them to our portfolios in the 1990s. And the result, of course, has been for the past 10 years, super safe asset classes with zero risk, have been performing better than stocks for a decade now. And that's bad news for the middle class investor. That means, how are you going to finance your retirement when stocks have been, they've essentially been providing a zero return dating back to January 2000. Stock prices, you know, they go up and they go down, but they're essentially just staying level until this recent crash, where now they're far below that. But until then, they were holding level. So most of us have most of our retirement assets in an asset class that's providing no return, except for dividends, and that's enough to make up for inflation. Well, you know, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. We're not going to get to where we need to get to with that sort of situation. Well, people who look at investing in serious ways have been wondering for a long time now, you know, when are we going to get down to the business of solving this problem? When are the people who advocate passive investing going to start to, you know, get with the program, get a little bit serious in the advice they offer, and, you know, tell middle-class investors about the findings of the academic research going back to the 1980s that the efficient market theory is nonsense, that passive investing cannot possibly work in the real world? Why don't we tell people this so that people will know to lower their stock allocations, to protect their portfolios, and so that prices will be pulled down to a point where stocks can once again be an engine of growth in our portfolios? Well, that problem's been solved, presuming that we stay at these levels. It's certainly possible that we could see a big jump up. You know, whenever you see a drop this sharp, you have to wonder, is it permanent? Or is it just a temporary thing? Are we just going to shoot back up again? And I don't know the answer. But presuming that this is a permanent drop, we have, I don't mean an all-time permanent drop, but a drop that will stay in place for some time. We've solved that big problem. We're now at price levels where stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition. So can we celebrate that? Can we let that in? Can all these experts trying to persuade us not to panic, can they, why not use that? That's a very legitimate argument against panic. And I don't hear people saying it. It goes back to something that I harp on all the time. Two things. The horror of passive investing. This is the horror of passive investing. People think, when I always talk about how bad passive investing is. It's just like a mantra coming out of me. And I think that people get the idea that all I mean by that is that passive investing gives bad advice by ignoring valuations. That passive investing says to stick to your high stock allocation even when it's extremely dangerous to do so. And of course, that's a big part of my criticism. But it's more than that. Passive investing is a mindset. It's a way of thinking about investing that is exactly opposite of how you want to be approaching investing questions. And this is a perfect example. Obviously, if you had a good percentage of your portfolio in stocks, you've suffered horrible financial losses. And who can blame you if you panic? You've lost, if you save X amount per year, your saving effort has been put back, a decade? Obviously, it differs from person to person. In some cases, it's a few years. In some cases, it might be as much as a decade. I mean, people have taken a huge hit. So there's grounds for panic. There's grounds for panic to lose that amount of money in that short amount of time. But the contrary message is, did you want to stay where we were? Where stocks were never again going to provide a return above zero? How are you ever going to fund a retirement that way? And your alternative is, some asset class that provides 1% or 2% real, whatever. There was a day when TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, were providing 4% real. That day is gone. So if we don't have stocks, we're in trouble. And we haven't had stocks for a long time now. Well, now we've got stocks back. That's what people should be saying. We've got stocks back. Starting today, stocks offer a solid long-term value proposition. Go to the stock return predictor, the calculator at my website. It will tell you the most likely return on stocks in 10 years. I haven't checked it in the last few days, but the number is up. I believe the number is up close to 6% now. I think it might be a little bit below 6%. It's close. 6% real. That's so 6% plus inflation. So with 3% inflation, you're talking about a 9% return every year for 10 years. That's something to celebrate. So can we let that in? Now, why can't we let it in? Why aren't we hearing that? The reason we're not hearing it is because these experts don't want to acknowledge that passive investing doesn't work. If they acknowledge the good news, it undermines their case that valuations don't matter. Because what they would be saying, if they say, we've got stocks back, which is the truth, this is the reality, if they say that, they're as much as admitting that stocks were a poor value proposition for the past 10 years, which they were. But how can you admit that if you've been recommending to people that they stick to their insane high stock allocations, you see? So this is the real problem with passive investing. It's not that passive investing gets one thing wrong, that it tells people, it gives people bad advice on where to set their stock allocation. That's very bad, because the single thing that we control about our success that we have where we have the greatest influence on our success as long-term investors is the proper setting of our stock allocation. That's what you can influence. You can't influence what's going on in the market, but you can influence your stock allocation. So telling us these crazy ideas, you know, to ignore prices when setting our allocation, it disempowers us. So that's bad. But it's even worse that it because you then have to cover up. Once you give bad advice, you've got to cover up all the realities. You get into a situation like this where people legitimately should be trying to discourage panic, and they can't do it. They can't make effective arguments because if they mention the good news, which would reassure people and make people feel better, they're undermining their case for this idiot investing strategy. I think we need to abandon passive investing. I think we need to bury it in a hole 10 feet deep. I would like to see this stock crash become referred to as the passive investing stock crash. The trillions of dollars that have been lost were lost because of this idiot investing strategy. It hurts humans and other living things. Passive investing hurts humans and other living things. Let's please give it up. Let's stop the nonsense, stop the game playing, and start talking about what we should be talking about, which is how to learn how to invest successfully for the long run. And the single thing we most need to learn is how to set our stock allocation, which means we have to be willing to talk about the effect of valuations on long-term returns. Can we please do that, investing analyst of the world? Can you find it in your hearts to do that little thing for the middle-class investor, please? All right. I find it insulting, some of the comments I've read. These experts are standing on their podiums, standing on their stages, and speaking down to us. You know, they're patting us on the head. I'm giving you my read, obviously, but this is how I hear the words that are being said. They're patting us on the head and saying, don't panic, little boy and little girl. It'll be all right. Well, middle-class workers are a tough enough group. We will pull through without anybody offering their patronizing comments. We will do just fine. But we've suffered a real hit. It's not a joke. We don't have millions put aside. If you have 5 million from the time, you know, when you've been engaged in financial planning for a living, and you lose 50%, you've still got 2.5 million. So maybe you don't need to panic. Maybe you don't need to be concerned. People who have saved $500,000 for their retirement and have lost half of it and are down to $250,000, they have legitimate concerns. And these concerns should be addressed in a serious way. And it's not serious to come out and say, don't panic, but just keep on doing what you're doing. Keep on doing the thing that caused the loss of $8 trillion. You know, proceed. Nothing to look at here, people. We need to know why this happened. And it happened because of the advice these people have been giving us, which doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. Prices matter when you buy cars and houses and comic books and bananas, and prices don't matter when you buy stocks? Huh? Try again, experts. Try again, investing experts of America. Please fix. I love these people. I'm a little more hot today than you know is usually the case, but I always get this. Oh, why are you being so mean to the investing experts, Rob? Don't be so mean. I am not. Don't disrespect them, Rob. I am not being mean to them. If my boy takes a spelling test and he can't spell half of the words, am I being mean to say, Timmy, we are going to practice these words until you get them right? You know, at least get most of them right. Is that being mean? That is being loving. I love my boy. I want my boy to know how to spell, so that my boy will be able to use his talents as he grows and matures and becomes an independent person in this mixed up world of ours. Well, that's what I want for all of these investing experts. I'll tell you, since I'm being a little hard here, a little harsh, I'll say something soft. A lot of these investing experts want to be giving effective advice. You can tell. They stick it in one chapter of their book. They put out all this gibberish for public consumption, and then they'll stick a chapter in there where they give the real story. And it's in total conflict with everything else they say. But why would they put that chapter in there if they didn't have any desire to do something more than what they're doing now? I don't think they know all the answers. I don't expect them to know all the answers. What I expect them to do is to look at what's been going on with the investing research for 20 years and, one, to report it so that people know, not to report it in some footnote somewhere and some question and answer, you know, to your column. Put it in a headline if it's big news so that people know. Explore it. You don't just report it one time. You come back and you address it as many times as you need to address it until you nail down what's significant about what we've learned. And we learned that passive investing doesn't cut the mustard a long, long time ago. Rob Bennett's learned it over the past 6 years because of circumstances. But I know today that Rob Bennett didn't discover the problem with passive investing. People discovered that back in the 1980s. It's now, that's 20 years ago, at least 20 years. So it's time to start writing some columns and some articles. And I don't mean on page 36. I mean the front page of Money Magazine. Let's get serious. And, you know, my point here is that this benefits everyone. It benefits the middle class investors because they get accurate, practical information, and it benefits the experts because the experts have spent years in training not letting them talk about the realities of investing. Is like taking a dog and throwing a frisbee but tying the dog's legs together so he can't chase the thing. It's cruel. These guys are smart. And these guys do follow the literature, and they have things to tell us. So maybe this is where the middle class investor merits some condemnation. We need to stop attacking them when they tell the truth. It's our shame that Scott Burns says the reason we don't tell people the truth about safe withdrawal rates is, quote, it is information most people don't want to hear. That's Scott Burns' shame, because he should tell that truth whether we want to hear it or not. It's his job. But it's our job. It's a community. Scott Burns is part of a community. And the middle class investors who don't want to hear it are part of the community too. And our job is to let him know that if he writes a column telling the truth about safe withdrawal rates, we're not going to be writing nasty letters to the editor saying, fire this guy. Or we're not going to be writing nasty letters saying, we're not going to buy from your advertisers because you told the truth about safe withdrawal rates and our tummies hurt. Cut it out. We all need to grow up. That's what I would tell my boy. I mean, my boy, you know, he does great in spelling. I don't mean to suggest that he doesn't. But if there came a time when he wasn't doing his homework and he's, you know, he's playing a video game instead of doing his homework, I could imagine myself sending that message to him. I wouldn't say grow up the first time I talked to him about it. But if it became a lingering problem, and this problem has been going on for 20 years now, where the academic research says one thing, and what you hear on television and the magazines and websites is this gibberish about how it's not necessary to change your stock allocation when prices go to insane levels. If Timmy stopped doing his homework and he was failing test after test, yes, there would come a point when I would say to him, Timothy, grow up. You have responsibilities too. You're a young boy. You don't have the same responsibilities as an adult. But, you know, you get to play video games. You get to watch television programs. You get to run around with your friends. You get to play Little League. And part of the deal is you study your spelling words so that when you get a test, you get a good percentage of the answers right. If I'm going to ask that of my 8-year-old son, is it not right that I ask it of these big shot financial planners that get paid $1 million a year to give investing advice and who either are not familiar with what the literature has been saying for 20 years or else are too cowardly to report it accurately? Is that not a fair statement? I love Scott Burns. I've got a binder where I collected all his articles, that, you know, my favorite articles. I've learned from Scott Burns. I'm grateful for his participation at my site. We exchanged emails. He allowed me to publish his comments, and his comments are very helpful. But I just don't think it's right that he says the reason we don't know the realities of retirement planning, the reason millions of middle-class people are going to suffer busted retirements is because we learned that the old school studies are wrong. They all got the numbers wrong. And we don't tell people because it is information people don't want to hear. La-di-da. If you're a doctor, a doctor's a professional. I think of these investing people as professionals. If you're a doctor and the patient has needs an operation but is frightened, doesn't want to hear it, do you say, oh, you all checked out, A-okay, no problems here, send him home, knowing he's going to die in 6 months if he doesn't get this operation? Is that a responsible doctor who would do something like that? How different is it when an investing advisor says, I'm not going to report to you what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates because I know that it's information you don't want to hear. I know whenever I report this kind of thing, I get angry emails from readers. And please, don't take this as a hit on Scott Burns. He's one person. He didn't cause this. There's hundreds of them, thousands of them doing this. They're charging lots of money, and they are reporting gibberish. And I can back that statement up. I told you the address of the website. There's lots of material there, and there's lots of material at lots of other places. It's a secret lying out in the open. There's nothing hidden about this at this point. It's unknown. Many middle-class investors don't have any clue what's been done to them. But it wouldn't take a whole lot of investigative journalism to figure it out. And any investigative journalist out there listening to this podcast, please give me a call. Send me an email. Contact Rob button there on the left-hand side of every page at the website. I can point you to the biggest story in personal finance of the past 50 years. All right, I better move on. But the point here is, we're talking about panic. It adds insult to injury for these people to now stand up and point their finger at us. Us is the middle class, the community of middle class investors. And yes, we've played into this. I don't say different. But there's a certain amount of grounds for panic here. You don't want the panic to get out of control. But you don't want people just to ignore this. This is an opportunity to learn. That's what we're experiencing. A very, very, very expensive learning opportunity. That's what we've got on our hands. And the very, very expensive part is sad as sad can be. But the learning opportunity part is necessary. We need, the phrase I used to use at some of the boards was, we need to break the fever. You know, have you had a time when you're very sick? You know, you're dizzy, you've got a temperature, you just feel awful, you're lethargic, and you break into a cold sweat, and that fever is gone. And boy, does that feel good, just to start returning to normal. Well, that's sort of like a crisis. Your body is going through a crisis. That's what we're going through today. And you know, I hate the part that everybody feels sick, that we're all nauseous and feverish and dizzy and all this. But I sure want to get the good out of it. And the good is we stop for, you know, 10 minutes and say, what the heck caused a loss of $8 trillion? And you don't have to have an IQ of 140 to figure out that it's this passive investing nonsense that we've been fed for, what, 40 years now. So let's take advantage of the learning opportunity. And sure, if an investor wants to come out, an investing expert wants to come out and say, we shouldn't panic. What we should do is understand what went wrong, fix it, and then move forward into the future. Well, I applaud the guy or woman. If it takes a woman, if there's a woman out there with the courage that a lot of these men lack, please step forward. Maybe that's what it takes. I have suspicions along those lines. I think, you know, I finished a podcast the other day saying that passive investing is a macho game. That's a big part of it. So maybe it'll take a woman. Maybe we need a woman John Bogle. Maybe John Bogle, well, I have hopes that John Bogle's going to come through for us, but there comes a point. We've now lost $8 trillion, and maybe he hasn't had time to absorb it. Maybe it's going to take a few months. But, you know, if he can't do it, someone else needs to step forward and do it, and I don't have the name recognition to do it. I'm out there, and I'm willing to say what needs to be said. But I don't have the name recognition to pull this off by myself. So, if it takes a woman, John Bogle, then please step forward. If that's you, if that sounds like you, we need to have a national debate on what works in investing. Investing matters. It affects everything we do. It affects what kind of vacations we can go on, what kind of houses we can live in, what kind of cars we drive. When we're going to be able to retirement, whether our children can go to college, what kind of health care we can afford. So, investing matters. and we treat it like a joke. I've reported to people the errors in the old school studies, the studies we use to plan our retirements, which is what we're saving for in the first place. And the answer you get is, oh, I'll tighten my belt. I'll survive somehow. Well, that's a great answer. You're using a study that gets the numbers wildly wrong. You're going to retire. You're not going to have anything close to what you need. And you tell people this, and the answer is, oh, I'll tighten my belt. I'll get by somehow. Well, if you have to get by, I hope you do get by. But why do this to yourself? And again, I you know, that's aimed at the middle class investor. But the problem the middle class investor has is he starts thinking this stuff doesn't make sense, and then he checks out what the quote unquote experts say, and the experts encourage him to stick with what he's been doing. So it goes round and round and round and round. At some point, we've got to cut that crazy circle. And we have to say, let's talk realities. Let's talk facts. Investing doesn't work this way. Valuations matter. Valuations affect long-term returns. True fact. And if valuations affect long-term returns, you sure don't want to be going with a high stock allocation when prices are where they've been for the last 10 years until the past few months. All right. Here's a suggestion about we want to avoid panic. That part makes sense. Panic, of course, serves no constructive purpose. What's the best way to do that? I mean, first of all, being informed is a preventive measure against panic. The reason why we are panicky about what has happened is that we don't understand the fundamentals of how stock investing works. Anybody who is following the passive investing model does not understand the ABCs of investing. The most important thing there is to know about stock investing is valuations always affect long-term returns. There's not one bit of contrary evidence in the historical record. No exceptions. So you need to know that valuations affect long-term returns, which the practical implication that follows is you must change your stock allocation when prices change dramatically. Nothing could be more clear. And of course, passive investing says just the opposite. It says don't change your stock allocation when prices go to insane levels. So you've got a conflict here. Now, when you've got an investing strategy, which is, it's popular. Passive investing is popular. I don't even think it's right to call it a strategy, really. It's a marketing technique. You know, that's all it is. It's just marketing. It's just fluff. There's nothing real there. But let's call it a strategy for sake of discussion. When you have a strategy that is wrong, the rational thing to do would be change it. If you discover it's wrong, change it. Well, for emotional reasons, we don't want to change it, or the experts don't want us to change it, or whatever. So we're not going to change it. So what do? You have to cover up. You have to avoid the realities. It takes a lot of human energy to avoid the realities. I look at, I participate on discussion boards, and let's take the Bogleheads board. Used to be the Vanguard Diehards board once upon a time. The talent there, it makes me weep. There are thousands of people there. Smart, energetic. They've saved large amounts of money. Not many middle class workers are effective savers. The Vanguard Diehards are. They're effective savers. They're smart. They're generous. They're willing to share what they've learned with others. They don't charge. But some of them, they're posting They post hundreds and hundreds of posts. Fine. We've got so much human talent there. So much human talent. Enough to change the world. I'm known for being effusive. So if you want to discount points, please do that. But I'm telling it the way it is. And then I look at what they're doing. And, somebody comes in and mentions the implications of the fact that valuations affect long-term returns. They're saying, maybe we shouldn't go over a cliff. Maybe we should allow some differing opinions here. Maybe we shouldn't be so dogmatic. Maybe we should allow discussion of the realities of stock investing. Duh. And these talented people go scurrying off to, cook up rationalizations or, God help us, studies, showing that there's no need to do it. If you could read what goes on at a board like that from my eyes, you would go mad. I don't mean to complain. This is the way it is. But what I see from the standpoint of a rational investor, a confirmed rational investor, what I see is huge amounts of human talent being misdirected. Every time somebody makes a good point, you'll get 10 people jump on with these crazy rationalizations that just don't make any sense. There was an example of it just this morning. Robert Shiller, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about Robert Shiller. Robert Shiller is basically the godfather of rational investing. He's the guy who advocates PE10, which is the valuation metric used at my website and in the work done by John Walter Russell. And Shiller, his comments were perfect. Shiller was not urging panic by any stretch of the imagination. Shiller said stocks are now well priced, which is true. They offer a strong value proposition. But he added the other reality, which is that the three times in the past when we went to valuations as insane as those we've experienced over the past 10 years, we didn't drop only to fair price. We dropped far, far, far below fair price. Not because of any economic realities requiring that, because of emotion. Because of panic, if you want to call it that. But the panic is built right into passive investing. Where do you think the panic comes from? You mislead people about how investing works. You get them to put all their money in, and then you pull the rug out from under them, and you don't expect to see panic. So the three earlier occasions on which we did this crazy thing, stock prices didn't stabilize at the levels we're at today. They fell another 50%. So Shiller made the point. He said, he's not predicting this. He just said, if what has happened in the past happens again, we could go to Dow 4000. And it won't really be Dow 4000, because if this were to happen, it would probably happen over 5 or 6 years. And so by the time we got to that level, it would no longer be Dow 4000. It would be a much higher number. But in real terms, adjusted for inflation and so forth, it would be Dow 4000. Now, Shiller doesn't want that to happen, and he's not saying it has to happen, and it doesn't have to happen. But somebody reported on this at the Bogleheads board. Shiller says we might go to Dow 4000. And the answer that people have isn't, oh, it looks like we've made a terrible mistake pushing this passive investing nonsense. Maybe we better get our act together. No. What's the answer? There were three or four people that came on and said, you should change the title of that thread. They used some sort of word game analysis to find some imaginary inaccuracy. He didn't predict 4,000. He said it's possible, but he doesn't think it's going to happen. And, the guy, when you write the title of a thread, you're not making, you're not making a legal document. The thread title was close enough. There was nothing wrong with it. And the guy quoted Schiller, so if you wanted to find out precisely what he said, it was all there. But they're wasting their... The point is not that these are bad people. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, why are they wasting their mental energies on this? On this nonsense? What Schiller said is important. Take it seriously. Deal with it. Deal with the reality that we may be going to Dow 4000. We may have another 50% drop. I want us to start talking about this stuff. We do not have to have a 50% drop. All we need to do today, the overvaluation problem is solved. That's been the big dark cloud over our heads, and that's solved. If I were using the Scenario Surfer, the calculator at my website where you plug in valuation levels on a year-by-year basis in a simulated investing scenario, and you see what works. And, you know, what I found is that long-term timing beats rebalancing consistently, 90% of the time. Well, if I saw a P10 level of 15, which is where we are today, my usual practice is to go to a stock allocation of 80%. Because a P10 level of 15 is fair value, and stocks offer a fantastic value proposition at fair value. Now, I don't recommend that today, and there's two reasons. One is the change has come too fast. 6 months ago, I would have been advocating an allocation of 20%, you know, or maybe 30%. So I don't feel good about going from 20% to 80% in that short a time period. It's just too dramatic. The price change has been dramatic. That's why. But I think the thing to do is, you know, I think it makes sense to go to 50% and then wait and see how things are 6 months from now and then, you know, move it up some more. If we stabilize, if we go up again to 20, obviously you don't want to do that. But if we stabilize or if we go down, you would want to increase your stock allocation again in 6 months or a year, whatever. That to me is the emotionally healthy way to proceed. But the second reason why I'm reluctant to say, you know, go to 80% today is that going by the numbers, that's what makes sense. Stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition at today's valuation level. October 12th, might not be true by the time you hear this podcast, but on October 12th, PE10 level 15, that's true. But it's sort of the one thing that still causes concern is we've still got this emotionalism everywhere. And see, that's why it would have been better if prices had gone down gradually, because I think the emotionalism would have seeped out over time. So by the time we get to a PE10 level of 15, you would think people are sort of accepting that was a fairy tale when we were at 25. But now I don't know if that idea has gotten through or not. I just don't know. I can't say. Who knows what lurks in the heart of man. We haven't had much time to absorb what's happened. So people are shocked, to be sure, but I wonder if a lot of people are thinking they're going to get the money back, you see? And if people are thinking they're going to get the money back, we haven't solved the emotional problem. People are still clinging to that fairy tale. And if it goes back up, that's a bad sign. See, this is where people are mixed up. People who are soaked in the passive investing philosophy get everything. It's like looking in a mirror. They always see the opposite of how things really are. They see the price drop as a bad thing when it's really a good thing. Returning to rational price levels is a super good thing for the long-term stock investor. It means that you're now going to get a good value proposition for your money. If we go back up again, what that's telling you is the emotionalism has not been wrung out of the market, which means that dark cloud remains going into the future. And all that means is we're putting off recognition of reality, which is the worst thing you can do. That's what causes that drop all the way down to 7 or 8. That's what causes the huge price drops that we've seen in the past. What we want to do is to avoid that, which means learning the realities. So the best thing that could happen, I don't want to see us go lower. There are some who would say, it's best, you know, if we go down to 8, that's great, because you can get these bargains. Well, those bargains are going to come at the price of an economic recession, which is going to cause people to lose their jobs, people to lose their houses. I can live without visiting PE 10 of 8. I can live quite happily. But I don't want it to go back up to 20. The best of all worlds is if we could stabilize where we are today. We're at a PE 10 level of 15, great long-term value proposition. If we could just stay there, you know, we're obviously not going to stay at the exact point, but if we could sort of vary between 13 and 17 for 5 or 6 years, that would mean a nice, healthy 6.5% real return every year for stock investors. Wouldn't that be nice? So I want to say what words I can say, you know, to make whatever small contribution I can make to making that happen. I want to discourage people from thinking they're going to get the money back. Because if you get it back, you get it back at the price of borrowing from the future, which just makes this more emotional instead of less. But I also want to do what I can to see that we don't go lower. And that means talking straight and letting people know two things: that yesterday's valuation levels were crazy, and that today's valuation levels are very good. Both of those things are true. What concerns me is the experts, the passive investing enthusiasts, they're saying today's valuation levels are fine. They're saying the same thing I'm saying on that point. But who can believe them? Who can believe them after what they've been telling us for 20, 30 years now? They've lost credibility. So how do they get that back? They get the credibility back by starting to talk straight. If you really want to stop the panic, and this isn't a one-day story, the panic issue is going to be around for a long time in all likelihood. I'll tell you a scenario that concerns me. I think there was an article in the paper this morning where a guy that, you know, that I guess he's a broker, and he was saying, you know, a lot of our people or a fund manager or something. A lot of our people have lost money, and we would ordinarily be expecting lots of phone calls, you know, panicky phone calls. And he says, we're not getting them. And it's very strange. But his interpretation was, this is just hit with such force, like a locomotive, that people are just in a state of shock. They're not even picking up the phone. They don't know how to process it. Well, I think that's an encouraging thing in one sense, because it suggests that this is hit with enough force that people are going to rethink. That's what we need. So that part of it I like. But the other part that I wonder about, the negative way of interpreting it, is, are people not letting it in? Are people thinking, oh, this is just temporary and I'm going to get my money back? I can't help but wonder if there aren't a lot of people thinking that. And not totally without reason. I mean, I think that could happen. So it's not that it can't happen. But I don't think it's healthy to wish for it. We should be happy to have stock prices at reasonable levels. We should not be rooting for prices to go back to insane levels. That's bad stuff. That's poison for stock investors, especially long-term stock investors. So I'm worried that people are... You know, people who are under stress will jump for anything. You know, it's like if somebody has cancer, you can almost sell them any miracle cure because they're desperate. And if people are desperate and they're looking for anything, then I could see them persuading themselves you know, that the gains they thought they had, the gains that the passive investing people told them were real, which were always cotton candy, thinking again, still, they're real. And then what would happen is, if prices stabilized for 6 months, which would be the best of all worlds, that's the best thing that could happen. If that happened, then these people would panic. In other words, the panic would be delayed. But when they saw, I'm not going to get my money back, I'm not going to get my 401k money back, it might take 3 months for that message to kick in, or 6 months, and then they would panic. Well, if that's the case, that means we've got a string of panics ahead of us. It's just going to be one panic after another, an unending string, because there's millions of people in this circumstance. So that, to me, is what we've got to stop. We've got to deal with that, and you don't deal with it by standing on a stage and pointing your finger at people and lecturing them not to panic. Everybody knows not to panic. The question is, can you help it when the savings of a lifetime is going down the drain? So people need straight talk. People need accurate information. People need an explanation of the fundamentals of how stock investing works. Simple as that. But this, the last point I wanted to make is that if you're worried about something, what's the worst thing to do? The worst thing to do is to remove yourself from other people and sit and stew by yourself about it. Then your worries, you dwell on them and they multiply. That's the worst thing you can do. The best thing you can do is just get up and do something. Go to your job, or go out for a run, or go to a movie. Have some friends over. Action. What sort of action could take place in connection with this stock panic? Passive investing stock crash of 2008. What action should logically follow? The action is what Michael Kitsis was talking about in my emails, my email correspondence with him. The action is, you know, Michael acknowledged that most financial planners are aware today that passive investing has failed, been discredited by the academic literature. But he said the problem is we don't have a new model, so we're sort of stuck with passive investing for the time being. Well, how about we all get together and start building a new model? That's positive in so many ways I can't count them. But one of the ways in which it's positive is that it means doing something. It's action. Instead of sitting around dwelling on our problems and listening to these phony baloney lectures about how we shouldn't panic as if that were news, as if we didn't know that already, why don't we get about the business of building a model that works? Building a model for understanding stock investing that makes sense. And I'll give you a clue on what that would be. You know why passive investing doesn't work? I could give you heaps of evidence demonstrating the facts, but you don't even need to look at historical data to understand why it doesn't work. Passive investing is contrary to common sense. Common sense tells us all assets are affected by price. The value proposition of anything you can buy is affected by the price that you pay for it. And it is impossible that that's not true with stocks. And passive investing says you don't have to adjust your allocation in response to huge price changes. That core statement, that's what passive investing is. The thing you're passive about is your allocation. That core principle defies common sense. Now, lots of people believe in passive investing. I know this to be true. I only know thousands, you know, that I've dealt with. But if those thousands believe, the reality is millions believe. It's a survey that I've dealt with, you know, a survey population. There's clearly millions. So the state of play is millions of people today are trying to finance their retirements, and they're doing it following a model of investing that defies common sense. Now, you can't take common sense out of human beings. It cannot be done. So what's really going on is these people are acting on the, you know, their actions are based on passive investing. They follow the plan and their words, their actions and their words. But there's another layer of consciousness where they're aware that it's all gibberish. Rob Bennett says the words, it's passive investing is gibberish. I say it all the time. But all I'm doing is holding a mirror up to people. I'm just saying, here's what you think, because they all think it. It's impossible that they couldn't. How could somebody not understand common sense? You know, everybody has common sense. That's why it's common. That's the whole idea. So any investing strategy that requires us to ignore common sense is going to fail in the long term. You know, it obviously can work for short periods of time. Passive investing had its heyday, you know, to be sure. But it can't work in the long term. It can't. No strategy that defies common sense can work in the long term. And that's why we're having this panic, stock panic. The panic doesn't come from the fact that prices went down. The panic comes from the fact that prices went down and we're in denial of it. We were pretending that we thought maybe prices wouldn't come down. But on another layer of consciousness, we knew darn well they were going to. That's the panic. It's that dynamic that causes the problem. That our investing beliefs are in conflict with our common sense. So we've got to bring our investing beliefs in accord with common sense. We've got to do that. So that's the model we need to be building. I call it rational investing. If other people want to call it something else, fine. Call it what you will, but that's where it's got to start. And of course, that means you got to wipe the slate clean. The problem we face today, we have no problem on the intellectual side. We've got intellectual firepower on investing coming out of our ears. We've got, you know, computer technology. We've got calculators. We've got, you know, global communications networks. I mean, we've got it all. What we don't have is a way to get the passive investing junk off the table. If you could just take it off the table, people could sit down, all the smart people involved investing, and come up with a model that works in no time. It's not that hard. You know, I've basically done it. But, you know, if people want to say your model's not good enough, you know, who are you? You're some guy that posts on the internet. Fine, I'd have no problem with that. Then get all the big shots in. But if they come to the table and they're going to discuss passive investing, it's not going to go anywhere. It's just going to go round and round in these circles of rationalization. That's all you're going to get. You're just going to get the kind of conversation you see at bogleheads.org played out on a bigger scale. That's it. It can't go anywhere until you can admit the realities. And you can't admit the realities if you're trying to prop up this passive investing model. It's got to be removed. So I always come back to this. The magic words are, I was wrong. That's what we need to hear from the experts, and the experts need to hear it from us. So when somebody steps on a stage and starts a speech about why we shouldn't panic, if they start with the words, I was wrong, well, that would get my attention. Now, that's a speech I want to hear. That's a sincere speech on how to stop panic. Because when the experts acknowledge the things they've got wrong, the whole game changes. Then all of these human energies are going in a positive direction. to solve the problems we face instead of trying to defend the bad advice that we've been giving and we've been hearing for 30 years. See, that's water over the bridge. You can't get those years back. We can't get the $8 trillion back. Be grown-ups about it. This is, you know, like I said earlier, we got to grow up. So to the extent I need to be harsh to get that message out, then it's my job to be harsh. I have to say grow up because that's what's needed. Once we start doing it, there's no need for it. You know, then the words that I should be putting forward are encouraging words. Great job. And the intellectual firepower is there. No doubt whatsoever. It's there. And one would like to think the motivation is there after suffering a loss of $8 trillion. But the speeches I heard this weekend from the quote-unquote experts, the speeches I heard this weekend were not encouraging. You know, I don't mean to make too much of it. It's the first day. I mean, this is a recent development. So let's give it time. But I wanted to say something about this talk of stock panic because this is not the way. Standing up on a stage and telling people don't panic and not telling them why they've lost their retirement money doesn't cut it. We need to be serious. So let's try to be serious. And once we start being serious, it's fun. Learning about investing is fun. It's a win-win-win-win-win. There's no downside. So if this stock panic leads to that, I believe we will look back on it someday as having been a very good thing. I hope that's the direction in which we take it. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.